Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
And thanks for listening this week. In September, the Navy formally stood up a brand new organization called Navy Cybersecurity within the Office of the Chief of Naval Operations. Its job will be to carry on the work of a year-long task force, Task Force Cyber Awakening, which in turn grew out of the Navy's realization that it needed a top-to-bottom approach to securing its IT systems, its weapons systems, its industrial control systems, and instilling cyber hygiene throughout the fleet. On the show this week, our guest for the full hour is Troy Johnson. He is the director of the new Navy Cybersecurity Organization. We sat down in a studio at the Pentagon to talk about how that new office is organized, what its missions will be, and why the Navy saw the need to create a new organization in the first place.
I would say that the reasons were twofold. One was just a matter of emphasis. In other words, the Navy decided that the issue of being secure in cyberspace needed to be elevated, needed to be escalated. And so part of the reason for forming the task force was that. We wanted to make it something that was a big enough deal that it would become a resourcing and organizing principle for the Navy. Mm-hmm. The other reason is that cyber is different from the other mission areas or other warfare areas in that the only place it all comes together from a fleet perspective, but from a Navy functional perspective, is at the Navy staff. We do submarines and surface ships in one area. We do aircraft or air operations in another area, aircraft equipment. We do C4I or transport networks, for instance, in another systems command. But the only place where that all comes together is at Echelon 1, is at the Navy staff. Mm-hmm. And so we knew that at least for a while, we needed an orchestrating organization that would take in what everyone was doing and orchestrate those things and bring them together so that the Navy had unity of effort and a common approach. Not common solutions, because everyone's solving their own problems in their own mission areas, of course, in their own domains, but common approaches. Common approaches and the right standards, the right requirements, mm-hmm. for instance. So that was the reason that the Navy decided to do something at the Navy staff.
You mentioned the Task Force Cyber Awakening that preceded the Navy Cybersecurity Division. Compare and contrast a little bit, if you could, what was done during that year-long task force process versus what's going to be ongoing capabilities and missions for your new division.
Right. I think the major difference is that the task force charter was to basically examine the situation, make short-term adjustments, and then figure out for the long term how the Navy needed to be different in order to carry out this important function. The lasting or permanent division now has to cash all those checks, if you will. You know, the task force was mostly about writing the checks, even though there were things that were done differently. I mean, we made adjustments to our resourcing and our investments. But for the most part, the task force was there to evaluate and create. And the permanent division's job is to now take all that and execute those new functions that were created. For instance, creating overarching requirements that all systems, all programs have to meet in acquisition. Helping to prioritize what technical standards we come up with, the order in which we produce them. Getting necessary policy adjustments. You mentioned the CIO apparatus earlier. Many of the policy documents that are in place now have come down through the CIO apparatus because that's how we've grown up. Mm-hmm. Some of those policies need to be updated. Some of them need to be changed. And part of the job of the Enduring Division is to the Navy Cybersecurity Division is to propose those changes. So writing requirements, prioritizing technical standards, proposing policy changes. And then, of course, the ongoing work of keeping tabs on all the various investments that we're making, really across resource sponsors. So in the Navy, we have different offices that have checkbooks, so to speak, for one office will pay for what surface ships do, another office pays for what subs do, et cetera. Well, cyber, as it turns out, and cybersecurity in particular, span across all those domains. So someone has to track how that, at least how the major investments are going across all those different checkbooks. And that's also a responsibility of my division.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I think an issue across the Defense Department, because as you say, there are cyber investments in lots of different bins out there. How well do you think you've done up to this point in tracking all that down and getting visibility over all of it?
I think we've done pretty well. The goalposts are moving on us a little bit, and what I mean by that is a year and a half ago, there were some cyber and cybersecurity-related things going on, but it was mostly within the domains where you'd think, in the information dominance domain for the Navy, for instance.
Right.
That's where most of that activity was. Well, over the last year and a half, as everyone has kind of realized the importance of and really kind of picked up the baton, if you will, in the cybersecurity arena, there's just a lot more going on around the Navy. And so while we're much, much better at keeping track of the major things folks are doing, every once in a while, we still discover something, fairly major that we didn't know about or didn't hear about, which is fine, because our job is not to constrict or throttle the activity, but really just to be a lens and try to focus the activity in the right direction. So, I'd say we did pretty well, and we're doing better all the time, and it gets more. There's more and more activity all the time when it comes to cybersecurity in particular. So.
And after getting some visibility, more visibility over those investments, talk a bit about, the extent to which you've started to shuffle money around and reprioritize the money that the Navy already had been spending in security, or did the task force lead you to overall spend more on cybersecurity?
I'd say it's a combination of both. There has been some extra money adjusted to do cybersecurity things to a certain extent in our cyber platform. Think of all the interconnected stuff that we have, ships and aircraft and mm-hmm. shore stations and everything else being interconnected. Think of that as a cyber platform. In some areas, we have added things to that cyber platform that didn't exist before, and that required investment. And then in some areas, it's just, in fact, at a much, probably an order of magnitude greater, it's really just existing programs or existing organizations reprioritizing how they spend their money and spending more on cybersecurity than they used to, either on their system or on their command or in their activity. Mm-hmm. So it's been a combination of both. We have some new money has been taken from other areas and moved to cybersecurity, and then just some reprioritization is happening. Quite a bit of reprioritization, I would say, is happening across the Navy. So it's a combination of both.
In dollar terms, how much of that happened in 16? And I don't know if you can talk about 17 yet, but so far.
Well, let's see. After FY14 and 15, we were already making some pretty significant adjustments, mostly to the larger network. I'll call it the transport layer, kind of like the freeway, in a road system, making adjustments at that level. And that happened in 14 and 15. Starting in 16, when we, toward the end of the, that was the first year we could impact in large scale through the task force, we extended beyond conventional IT to control systems that are on tactical platforms and other places, even ashore. And we got some money spent there, on the order of a few hundred million dollars. Again, this is across the five-year Future Years Defense Plan, the FYDP, as we say. So, it's not small change, hundreds of millions of dollars. We would all love, of course, to spend a lot more. It's just, in the current environment, in the current fiscal environment, it's just difficult. Lots of really good ideas aren't getting paid for these days, because it's a pretty austere environment. And cybersecurity is no different, but we're faring well so far.
Right. Yeah. Through the whole task force process, I think one of the main objectives there was to just do a wholesale examination of Navy networks and see where your vulnerabilities are. Talk about that process a little bit, if you could. And were there big surprises that you found when you started going and lifting up rocks?
We focused more on examining the organization than we did on examining the stuff. Mm. In other words, we're confident that a Navy that gets nuclear power plants underway every day and that lands aircraft on ships every day Can do things that are complex and do it pretty well, and we've been fortunate to do both of those things very well. So we knew if we got ourselves organized and resourced properly, that the Navy could fix it, that it would collectively fix it over time. So we focused a lot on the organization itself, as opposed to the individual things. We ended up discovering a lot of those things in the process, of course, because as you're talking about cybersecurity in this organization or that organization, or how you inspect or how you accredit, or you'll discover things about the equipment. I don't think we made major discoveries about cybersecurity and the stuff that we have. I think we were all generally aware. You know, the difference now is that we're moving out on doing something about it, widespread all across the Navy.
Mm-hmm. Overall, when you look at kind of the three big areas, you know, traditional C4 IT systems versus industrial control systems versus big weapons platforms, were there certain categories that were in better shape than others already and that needed less attention?
I would say the traditional IT probably fared the best, only because that's been an area that folks associated what we used to call information assurance and now we call cybersecurity, associated cybersecurity with that, you know, with that equipment and with those processes anyway. So they had a bit of a head start in the whole process. So I would say that equipment, those networks fared better, probably a bit better than industrial control systems and tactical control systems. Having said that, again, I wouldn't say there were great surprises. I think we found what we expected to find. So
fair enough.
Troy Johnson is the director of the new Navy Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the Chief of Naval Operations. We'll come back and talk more after a quick break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serviv. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serviv. Our guest this week is Troy Johnson, the director of the Navy Cybersecurity Division within the Office of the Chief of Naval Operations. He's talking with us about that new organization, why the Navy created it in the first place, and what it will do as a permanent standing oversight group.
You've talked before about how, at least in the early days, this office is going to be pretty materiel heavy, which means you're going to have arms down into the major systems commands, I guess. How's that whole process going to work? How are you going to govern the way the Navy actually goes out and buys stuff?
Well, the way the DoD acquisition process works is it's all driven by the right requirements, mm-hmm. really. And that's always been the holy grail from a cybersecurity perspective, because it's difficult to write requirements that apply across systems and over time and across many different domains. You know, how do you write up a cybersecurity requirement that applies to a certain type of certain airframe and also a certain submarine and also an army brigade and also it's difficult to do. And so that's one of the things that we're working on right now. I'm not really sure what that will look like when we're finished, because we're in the process of creating it now, but we fully intend to produce a good requirement. When we do, the acquisition system itself, I should say, one of the themes, one of the principles that we operated the task force under was that we were trying not to create new processes or new things. We were trying to use mainstream processes like platform certifications, ship certifications, or aircraft certifications to the maximum extent possible. We wanted to elevate or escalate the importance of cybersecurity in those things, because those things already exist and the Navy already knows how to do those things. Mm-hmm. In a similar way, the acquisition system already works. You know, if you get a good requirement, the acquisition system will produce things, systems, programs of record that meet those requirements. We've already proven that over and over again. The key is to get good requirements on the front end, you know, supplemented by technical standards and specifications, the more specific items about systems. So that's been the main thrust, is figuring out how to leverage the existing acquisition process and to make it more agile where we can, of course. But it turns out that at least for my money, the getting the good requirements on the front end, which has been really tough to do, is a lot more of a key to the kingdom than any particular agility. If you write the requirements right, they can be agile as well, mm-hmm. I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and that kind of anticipated my next question, which was going to be, you know, obviously the last thing we need is another layer of bureaucracy on top of the IT acquisition process in DoD. What all are you doing to make sure that this new organization doesn't serve as another speed bump? I mean, is it really just about set the requirements and get out of the way, or are there other things you can do to promote agility and security at the same time?
I would say the themes that we're driving down are, one, I mean, our overriding principle is kind of like the Hippocratic Oath, you know, the do no harm approach. So we're definitely proceeding with the intent of not getting in the way of any of the good work that's already underway in many places all around the Navy. On the other hand, there are things that only we can do here, you know, in the Pentagon, such as setting requirements, such as insisting on the right technical standards in the right order applied by the right people to the right systems. And then also we can serve as orchestrators, if you will. If something's happening in our with our shore facilities that maybe the air community can benefit from, or that the transport or C4I people can benefit from, then we should share those things. And right now, we can serve as that centralizing and orchestrating function. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to do the parts for sure that only we can do, like setting requirements and advocating and driving standards, and while orchestrating the other things that everyone else is on the hook to do, like systems commands are on the hook to do, or fleet commanders are on the hook to do, or type commanders are on the hook to do. So everyone has their own role in the Navy, and the idea is to leverage those roles and escalate cybersecurity in those existing roles. Mm.
Let's talk about the whole concept of cyber safe and how that plays, how you declare something to be cyber safe or not, and how you decide whether or not that's even applicable to a given piece of equipment that the Navy's acquiring, modifying, whatever.
Right. So we have processes already for certifying tactical platforms. For instance, a ship gets certified, is ready to operate. And we want the cybersecurity aspect of that to just be part of that. We want that to just be folded in. We don't want to create something new. We don't want a separate process that runs in parallel that's considered different in some way. We want it to be part and parcel to what everyone does in certifying their stuff to operate. CyberSafe is in the process of becoming the way we call out particular parts of the network, particular parts of systems, particular processes, and we call those out for additional hardening or additional protection or additional configuration control, additional scrutiny, basically, because we've decided that they're important enough to the mission of wherever it is they operate, that they need to be built a certain way, maintained a certain way, configured and kept that way a certain way, disposed of a certain way even. This has to be a relatively limited subset of things, of course, due to the additional cost involved to do that, but we've decided that those things need to happen. If we can get the technical standards written just the right way for those things, then those things will just get factored into the existing certifications that we have, and so it shouldn't require an additional certification. You know, we will say, oh, that system there, that tactical platform, that ship is cyber safe. I don't think we'll get to that point. What we'll say is, everything that's on that ship that needs to be is cyber safe compliant. Mm-hmm. And I think that's as far as we'll need to go.
And who makes those discrete decisions? I mean, is it up at the OPNAV level, or is it down in the systems commands with all of their, I guess, subordinate cyber safe offices?
Yeah, so the systems commands will recommend which things need to be cyber safe based on their knowledge of the mission areas. Nobody knows how to do surface ships like the people who do surface ships, for instance, and it shouldn't be a C4I person telling them what should be cyber safe on a surface ship. Having said that, the idea of centralized control and separation of powers, frankly, you know, you have one group that says this should be cyber safe, another group that sets the technical standards to get it there, and you got a third group that inspects it to make sure that it's at that level. Or assesses it or audits it, and then someone who oversees that whole process. Well, overseeing that whole process happens at Echelon 1. At least it will for a while. I mean, once the process is up and running after a few years, it's possible that it could be delegated. But for now, it needs to be at Echelon 1 for the reason I started out by talking about, which is this is the only place where all these things come together in a cyber realm. So it's important that it happen at the Navy staff.
That is Troy Johnson, the director of a new permanent organization in the Office of the Chief of Naval Operations called Navy Cybersecurity, the successor to the year-long Task Force Cyber Awakening. We'll talk more about the concept of cyber safe after another short break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minutes, I'm Tracy McRae. Fertility, the ability to have a baby, can be affected by a variety of factors.
What we actually know is that about 15% or one out of six couples has difficulty getting pregnant.
Dr. Janie Jansen, a fertility and conception specialist at Mayo Clinic, says when couples are having difficulty, doctors look to three common causes.
So when we're seeing couples that have difficulty getting pregnant, the three areas that we think about evaluating are number one, the eggs. So does a woman have a good supply of eggs? Are the eggs of good quality? And the second one is fallopian tubes. This is a pretty simple principle. The best sperm and eggs in the world can't get through fallopian tubes that are blocked or damaged. And then since it takes two to tango, the third piece in that puzzle is actually sperm.
If you are having difficulty conceiving, evaluation by a fertility specialist can diagnose the problem and help you explore your fertility treatment options. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org.
Thanks for listening to federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Getting back to our conversation with Troy Johnson, the director of the new Navy Cybersecurity Division. Among its jobs will be to try to drive a culture of good cyber hygiene throughout the Navy and to apply extra security precautions to the systems the service views as most critical. The office plans to do that through a concept called CyberSafe, a takeoff on the SubSafe program that's kept the nuclear submarine fleet free of any major accidents for decades.
Can you say a bit more about what the delineation of what it means to be cyber safe? I mean, for example, is it possible for a component to be commercial off the shelf and cyber safe at the same time, or does it have a stringent, strict definition? It's got to be out of a trusted foundry, et cetera, et cetera.
So it is. I'll say it's possible. Some of those decisions have to be made after the things have been selected. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but until we have a pretty decent idea of exactly which things are going to be cyber safe, it'll be difficult to say exactly which measures need to be taken. It kind of depends on what they are.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I guess is what I'm saying. And so, but it absolutely will be things like, in some cases, trusted foundry or supply chain risk management, to have a trusted supply chain, for instance, or just a trusted source, or commercial's okay, commercial off-the-shelf technology is okay, but it has to be configured a certain way and then locked down and can only be changed through permission of the central authority at Echelon 1. Or it could be processes that need to be locked down. I won't go too far down that road, but there are certain processes related to cyber that we think will need to be locked down as well, and we'll treat those in a similar way. Particular training for the kind of people that work on these things, special qualifications, special evaluations, more frequent evaluations of the people to make sure they have a certain skill level if they're going to work on the things. Mm-hmm. But it's all driven from what those things are, and until we have a pretty decent idea of what those things are and are going to be, it'll be difficult to say exactly what those measures are. This is the reason that we're still talking in generalities. Yeah. You know, it might feel like we're still talking in generalities, but that's because you have to select the stuff first. And there's a lot of systems, and there's a lot of topology that needs to be evaluated, you know, to decide which things we're going to decide need to be cyber safe.
And just to take your example of, you know, taking a commercial product and making sure it's configured in the right way, it seems to me a lot of that on a lot of items is done for you by DISA through the whole security technical implementation guide process. So how does this all play in the joint world? Because it seems as you guys converge more and more toward the joint information environment and move behind joint regional security stacks, you're going to want your standards to line up with what's being done within JIE.
Right. So we are, I'll say that we're less bound than one would think probably by that system, only because we're creating CyberSafe to be hardening and security that's beyond what we'd call normal cybersecurity. So those things you mentioned, like security controls from the NIST catalog through the NIST risk management framework, configuring things according to the STIGs that you just mentioned, the implementation guides.
The whole NIAP process, so that, this is all beyond
that. The approved, this would be beyond that. This would be, these devices are so important that we're gonna go beyond the most stringent level of normal cybersecurity and harden those even further. Having said that, to the extent that there are already controls, security controls or implementation guides that are written already that can apply to techniques that we want to use and apply to things maybe where they wouldn't be applied, we'll take advantage of those. We won't rewrite just to rewrite, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll take advantage of controls and standards that are already written. Having said that, we fully expect to have to create new standards as a result of what we decide to dub as CyberSafe and mm-hmm. certify and control as CyberSafe.
So we've talked mostly about acquisition and materiel so far. The whole mission of Navy cybersecurity goes beyond that, though. How do you start getting this out into the fleet once you expand your horizons beyond just the materiel piece?
You mean getting the word out or getting changing behavior?
Getting the word out, changing behavior, changing culture.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. We have a communications plan that we've developed along with the folks here at the Chief of Naval Information that breaks our messaging down between what the Navy is doing to make cybersecurity more of a resourcing and organizing principle and also what you should do differently as a Navy person, and they're broken out like that. And so we are busy kind of sending messages downrange, if you want to use military terminology. From a messaging perspective and also from an accountability perspective, in fact, most of the stress at this point from the Secretary of Defense staff level and from U.S. Cyber Command level is more about the human component of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. I think we've all kind of realized at about the same time that, you can feel great technology all day long, but in the end it still ends up with, somebody clicking something or somebody plugging in their phone to charge it, or somebody doing something they're not supposed to do, and it obviates, skips over all the great technology that you fielded. So getting folks to consider themselves part of the front lines and consider themselves all as cyber warriors in some sense is a thing that we're pushing through mostly through communications right now, and soon probably through accountability measures, which are still in design, to be honest. I'll give you an example. If a person shows up late for a watch, shows up late for work, if you will, three times over the span of 2 weeks, Navy leaders know what to do about that. Yeah. I mean, there's a range of things to do. Different commanders, some commanders are stricter than others, but essentially, we know what the range of possible consequences or sanctions are for that kind of behavior. If somebody maybe shows up at a club that's off limits or something, it's been declared off limits by the base commander, and has discovered, we kind of know what to do about that. But for cyber, if somebody plugs up their phone, to charge it, and then that puts some malware on the Navy system, how bad is that? I mean, what does that mean from an accountability perspective? What does that mean? What should we do? So we're in the process of kind of designing, template accountability guides that commanders can use. So it's a combination of getting the word out to let everybody know this is a big deal, and then also taking accountability where it makes sense, in a proportional manner, in a manner that makes sense. And we're sending messages on the first to make it clear to everybody, to fair warning, so to speak, that this is a big deal, and that accountability measures will come in where we need them. And then we're also, designing at least templates for those accountability measures.
So the messaging to the fleet, if you had to condense it down to 30 seconds or so, what's the overarching message that you're trying to send to people right now?
Don't be the guy that lets the bad guys in. Mm-hmm. That's basically what we're trying to get at. It reminds me of a commercial. I forget what it was. The tagline was "Want to get away." So, you know, some gal's at her computer in an office, and she clicks on something, and then suddenly she starts hearing this malware pop up on computers all over the office. And so, you just don't want to be that person. You don't want to be the person who does the thing you're not supposed to do on the network, and lets the badness in, lets the malware in, lets the intrusion in, which can be malicious or not. That's not really the point. The point is you don't want to be the person that lets it in. So everyone has, it's really very akin to the old OPSEC, loose lips sink ships, right, kind of approach, which is don't be the person that lets out the secret. In this case, don't be the person that lets the malware in.
Troy Johnson is the director of the new Navy Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the Chief of Naval Operations. We'll talk a bit more about the culture change aspects of that new office after one more break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin.
This is Roger Waldron, president of the Coalition for Government Procurement and host of Off the Shelf. My show brings a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Each week, I talk to experts from inside and outside government about the latest federal compliance and policy information for government contractors. Join me every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 a.m. for Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, or download it anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Off the Shelf.
We're back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Servu. One more segment with Troy Johnson of the U.S. Navy. He's the director of the new Navy Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the Chief of Naval Operations. We've been talking in the last few minutes about one of the functions of that organization, driving better user behavior across all Navy systems that have cyber implications.
Back to your accountability point, I mean, what's kind of the status quo on that right now? If you do let a bad guy in, is it mostly you just get counseling and told not to do that again, or is there any accountability in the fleet right now?
I'd say it's a mix. I'd say it's pretty uneven right now, just because it's so new.
Commander by commander,
It really is kind of personality driven. Some commanders say, well, that's really a big deal to me, and I realize it's a big deal just because of my background and what I know about this, and therefore I'm going to hold this person to account. And then some commanders, you know, not as much. So it's really just a mix right now. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to accelerate the process. I mean, over time, 10 years from now, you won't have that problem. Everybody will know. And Navy commanders will do a range of things, but the range will be pretty tight, and we'll take care of it. It's just that we don't want to wait, 10 years for that to come in. We want to accelerate that. We want to have the accountability be much more uniform and much more predictable and expected. And so one way to do that is to make commanders comfortable with what the right range of accountability measures are for different things on the network, for different cyber things.
And if there is that degree of variability today, it seems to me like part of your job has to be to communicate to commanders, this is important to the CNO.
Exactly. Exactly right. So we're working on that as well. That's part of our plan as well. So we're communicating to leaders, we're communicating to users, and we're communicating to the people who do this as a living. You're called different things around the DoD right now. They're providers or their cybersecurity workforce or whatever it is. So, but we're communicating to them as an audience as well. The people who scan and patch, for instance, the people who change passwords, the people who create accounts, the people who get rid of accounts, the people who review logs, all those kind of things that cybersecurity people are supposed to do. We're communicating to them as well about the importance of their job and how they need to do it as if they're working on a weapon system. Same thing.
As you went through that whole one-year sort of assessment process during Task Force Cyber Awakening, how much, as you kind of racked and stacked and cataloged all your vulnerabilities, how much of it really was just that human element, people doing dumb stuff versus, misconfigurations, whatever?
I'd say it's a mix. I don't think we have good stats right now on the level of accountability across the whole Navy. We don't have systematic statistics like we do for most everything else.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to say. A lot of our evidence is anecdotal, but I would say it's a mix. I will say too that for every person we find that's doing something that they shouldn't be doing, we find people that are doing stuff that goes above and beyond what they're currently asked to do from a security perspective that makes things better. And so we're encouraged by those things. So we're trying to account for the one and get accountability measures in for the one while encouraging the other, if that makes any sense. But there are a lot of people out there doing what we ask them to do plus, which is a good thing. And then we have to. I don't think there's malice in the measures people are taking that we don't want them to do. I just think it's a lack of awareness on their part. I think they figure it's just technology, just like at home. Yeah. And so they just plug stuff up, or they just do stuff that they can do at home, and it seems okay, you know, to them. And so we just have to start sending the message that it's the Navy network, and it's not okay.
Yeah. I know you said you're still in the process of drawing up those accountability templates, but do you have a sense of when people should start to expect to see accountability when they do things wrong, even when no malice is involved, as you said?
I would say, I guess, as far as I'd want to go, is probably say it's on the order of months instead of years. So, you know, in some few months, I would say. Difficult to put a finger on because it's a big organization. Sometimes it takes a while to get stuff out, but I would say on the order of months. Mm.
Just to switch back to the technical side, and as we finish up our last few minutes here, you know, POEIS obviously starting to work on the next generation of the NGEN contract, whatever that's going to be. I've got to imagine you're going to want to be in that process to make sure NMCI is as cyber safe as it can be under whatever the new contract structure ends up being. I mean, are there specific considerations the Navy needs to be looking at in that big acquisition process to raise the bar for NMCI as a whole?
We are definitely involved. We are definitely talking to POEIS as they get ready to recompete the contracts, mm-hmm. especially the security aspects and really the whole architecture, because that has an impact on security as well. Having said that, the security is pretty decent on NMCI now, you know, as those things go. Back to, you asked me before about how the different domains did or how the different categories of things did, and I said the traditional networks tended to do a little bit better just because they've been paying attention to this for a while, and I think NMCI fits that bill. We've been driving down that road for a while now and are getting more secure all the time. So by scale, it's very large. Which means the attack surface is bigger just because there are more workstations. There are just more things out there. So by definition, there's a little more exposure. Having said that, there's quite a bit of security as well. So we're working with those folks as they get ready to recompete, and advising them. I don't think there's specific whiz bang technology that they need to be considering necessarily. It's more conditions based. You know, mm-hmm. we need you to. As they're asking for people for bids for contracts, it's more like, we need you to, you know, we'll need it to this funny, this fast, you know, this much, as opposed to this particular tool or that particular technique. It's more of a conditions-based thing.
Yeah, big attack surface, as you said, but I guess now that I think about it, you guys have the advantage of having had a centrally managed enterprise network, unlike your sister services, for quite a long time, so that probably helps matters.
It does. It really does. It's and as with everything in life, thinking about something, talking about something, drawing something up on a whiteboard is one thing, and then running it in real life is a different thing. It always works out different than you thought it was going to. And so the experience of 10 or 12 years of running an enterprise and deciding what that means, both from an operations perspective and also from a security perspective, is substantial. I mean, we've really learned a lot on a network that doesn't really have that many analogs. You know, there really aren't that many networks around the globe that are that big. There are a few, but there aren't that many that are that big and this diverse in the way that we operated. So we've learned a lot about how to run an enterprise, and it seems to be the right thing. I think many folks are probably making plans to go down that road themselves. So I think what we did was the right thing. So we're always looking to do better and to harden it, of course, but I think we've done at least pretty decent so far.
Just to wrap up in our last couple minutes, beyond what we've talked about so far, what are the main things that you see your office doing, getting to work on, moving out on in the next several months to a year, 18 months? Pick a time frame.
Well, we're busy. So right now we're probably even busier than we will be a year from now, because we're busy standing ourselves up, you know, establishing the division itself as we continue the work, as we add on more work. And in addition, to be honest with you, we've gotten so much positive attention, if you want to call it that, that I spend a lot of time, you know, doing interviews or talking to people or briefing people, sharing lessons learned about what we did over the task force. So we're doing a lot of that as well, which is an additional amount of work. But that's a good thing. We're happy to do that, and I think that's a good thing. It just adds to the workload. But we'll be working on things like the requirements that I talked about, which are key to the acquisition world, the workforce items, getting our workforce really up to speed on taking the next step with workforce. You know, traditionally we've relied very heavily on commercial certifications and a couple other things, and so we want to bump that up, make that more robust for how we qualify people to be the kind of people that we want. You know, the professionals who secure the stuff. Getting a good dashboard developed that gives us a strategic view of the risk posture all across the Navy. We're working on that right now as well. And the last thing is really just the cultural change, the accountability and the education and the training, really making that stuff, really taking that to the next level. So we've done some and we want to do more. We want to do more and more, more robustly.
All right, Troy. Well, good luck with all that. Thanks for talking with us. A lot of good info there. Appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Troy Johnson is the director of the Navy Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the Chief of Naval Operations. We talked recently at a studio at the Pentagon just a few weeks after the division was officially created, growing out of the Navy's year-long Task Force Cyber Awakening. You can read more about both TIFCA and the new Navy Cybersecurity Division at federalnewsradio.com. That's going to do it for this week's edition of On DoD. If you missed any of our program this week, we'll post the full show, as always, at federalnewsradio.com/OnDoD. I'm Jared Serbu. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.